From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. Get ready for that. Well, happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Those of you who had the comfort of staying home with family, I hope you enjoyed it. Those of you who had to work, or you might not have family, will sit back and enjoy the Coast to Coast ride tonight. By the way, special thanks to my staff today for coming into work on a holiday, gobbling up a little turkey with their families, and then heading off to the studio in Los Angeles. So thank you. And of course, we'll mention who they are at the end of the show tonight. Here's what's happening. Black Friday is coming, the holiday shopping season starting already. People around the country, all over the place, are getting in line, some of them getting into stores that are already open to spend what money they do have on bargains and sales. I know several people who are in line right now. I should have called them on a cell phone just to see what it's like. I hate to be the person in the front of the line when the doors open, they'll get trampled. And some demonstrators are planning to occupy retailers on Black Friday to protest the business that are in the pockets of Wall Street, they say. The organizers are encouraging consumers to either occupy or boycott retailers that are publicly traded. I don't think that's a good idea. This country is fueled by capitalism and people buying goods and services, and we need to do that. Occupy Wall Street has a position to protest, but not at stores where people are buying for Christmas. You know, a simple history and physical exam may be all that is needed to diagnose a case of the holiday blues. But what is it about the holiday season that so many people get depressed? Well, I'm beginning to call him our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Bragan, with us. Peter, why do people get down during the holiday season?
Well, one reason, of course, is that the holidays weren't always a good thing as a child. And it comes back and haunts us from our childhood. Sometimes it's that it's disappointing right now, George. Things aren't going the way we really, really want. Maybe we pretend they're going the way we want to, but the marriage can be improved, or the relationships with the children can be improved, or work can be improved. People get sad around the holidays because it highlights their personal reasons for holidays. And when that happens, it's time to use it as a signal. You know, it's not time to lay down and feel sorry. It's time to say, look, I'm unhappy on a day that I'm supposed to be happy.
That's
what
right.
Can I do to get going?
But you know what, Peter, as a psychiatrist, it shouldn't only be just this day that they get happy. They should be happy most of the time, shouldn't they?
Well, I agree with you enormously. And people who are unhappy at Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's are probably feeling the unhappiness they've had all along. And there's a lot of reasons people can be like that. You know, some of the simple reasons are, you know, you're using drugs or alcohol. That doesn't lead down a good road. So tomorrow, start going to an AA meeting. People get unhappy because of issues they haven't resolved over their life. Maybe it's time to look into some counseling, maybe family therapy. Ask a member of your family to go along with you. And I think it's also an indicator that you just need to have a different attitude. And I deeply believe, George, that good attitudes start with gratitude. You know, Thanksgiving was created by George Washington. He wanted the American public to thank God for the Revolution and for the Constitution, because George thought his own bumbling efforts weren't enough to have made all that come out so well. So I think gratitude is a good starting point to turn around being unhappy.
You got it. Thank you, Peter. And many thanks to you, by the way, and your contributions to coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Bragan has written a book, several of them, his latest, Medication Madness, and his website's part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. And take some time. Those of you who haven't been friending us on Facebook or following us on Twitter, just go to coasttocoastam.com right there at the top in the far right-hand corner. You can just click that, and then you're right in, and you get all the instant information that Lex posts, okay? An influential Iranian parliamentarian said that the country has now arrested, as we reported a day or so ago, 12 agents of the American Central Intelligence Agency. But what is happening with Iran? Things are starting to heat up. Let's check in with Douglas Hagman, Homeland Security U.S. Douglas, what do you hear? What are your sources telling you these days?
Well, George, two things. I'm glad you brought up the issue of the compromised CIA agents, because I think this is probably one of the most underreported stories that's out there, and for good reason. But the outing of one CIA agent is extremely serious, but could be attributed to a number of relatively benign circumstances. In this case, it was a compromise of more than one. It was upwards of 12. The number is still being tossed around.
Yeah.
But this indicates a far more nefarious problem that suggests compromise from within, to be specific, within our own State Department, perhaps our own CIA, and that has a direct bearing on what's taking place in Iran. Earlier this month, you saw, perhaps you might have seen the two aircraft carriers, unprecedented, going through the Straits of Hormuz.
That's right.
You know, so things are heating up, and I think that this CIA agent debacle is going to be a tripwire of sorts, at least a human tripwire. For us to take perhaps military action in the Middle East.
All right, Douglas. I'm glad you had a nice Thanksgiving with your family, by the way. Russia has announced now that its scientists had for the first time made contact with its stranded Mars probe. Now, that's the probe that was going to Mars' moon Phobos. After the European Space Agency received a signal, they are desperately trying to get the engine started to get this rocket ship on its way to the Mars moon before it comes through the Earth's atmosphere, which could happen pretty darn soon. So we'll continue to follow up on that story as well. In a moment, you might have had turkey today, but what did you really eat? We're going to check in with Eric Herm. His book, Son of a Farmer, Child of the Earth, that's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast this Thanksgiving night. I'm George Norrie. We've got a special split program for you tonight. For the first couple hours, we're going to be talking about you and the food you eat and your health with a fourth-generation farmer, Eric Herm, who deals with harsh economic realities, complicated legislation facing farmers, as well as health impact of the GMO crops and excessive chemicals. His book, as I mentioned, Son of a Farmer, Child of the Earth, A Path to Agriculture's Higher Consciousness, provides a resource of healthy alternatives that should inspire farmers' transformation from the corporate-motivated producers back to the old ways. And here's Eric on Coast to Coast. Hey, Eric, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, same to you, George. Thanks for having me on.
How did you get interested in this? Being a farmer, how did you get interested in trying to eliminate the use of GMO crops?
Well, we were planting GMOs, a little bit of them anyways, the Roundup Ready cotton in 2005 and 2006, and one day I just happened to start reading the bag out there in the field, and I was looking at all these warning labels on the back of this bag of seed, and there's five or six different types of warnings telling you not to do this, don't touch it, don't get it in your mouth, don't, and I'm like, well, this is seed, what, why should I be so scared of it? And then I started doing some research, getting on the internet and reading lots of books and finding out exactly what GMOs were, because we had no idea. And most farmers, I would say 99% of farmers who are planting it have no idea, you know, that these seeds have the genes of a pesticide and a herbicide in their genetic makeup, as well as antibodies. That's what's going into the food. That's what's in the seed. That's what's going into the food we're eating.
In the past, I want you to tell us about the God-given seeds that we used to use for food and for cotton specifically, because you know about that well. What did we have? How did we get that? What did farmers do every year before GMOs started?
Well, we could catch our own seed. Year after year, you know, farmers would catch so much of their seed and use it again. That's the way agriculture works. It's the way it's always worked for thousands of years. You save so much of your seed to plant for the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, it was costing us next to nothing. You know, even today, right now, our own indigenous seed is costing us less than $30 for a 50-pound bag. And now the genetically modified seed is costing anywhere between $350. Some of it's up to $450 a bag.
And you have to do that every season, right?
You have to do it every season because they have a patent on these seeds. Monsanto and these other GM companies, they have the patent, and it's illegal for farmers to catch these seeds now.
What has happened to the seeds that nature gave us a long time ago, the ones that you used to use before we had GMOs.
They've slowly gone to the wayside. And then plus you've got contamination with some crops, especially like corn and canola, where they're contaminated by the genetically modified. And it's becoming more difficult for farmers who are trying to do it the right way, whether they're organic or conventional, to do it without invasion of the genetically modified crops. Soy is a different story because it's self-pollinating, but 94% of soy is genetically modified already in this country.
That is amazing. So basically what you're saying, the seeds that Mother Nature gave us are practically gone.
We're losing them. Yeah, and that's because four major commodity crops in this country already have been taken over. 90% of corn, cotton, canola, and soybeans essentially are genetically modified, and they're going after more crops. Alfalfa was deregulated. That's another 20 million acres right here. That we have 160 million acres of genetically modified crops in this country already. Worldwide, there's over 365 million acres. That's about twice the size of Texas.
How much is the business of GMOs per year? What do you think?
Oh, it's billions. It's in the billions. Monsanto alone will bring in over $12 billion just in seed and herbicides.
And that's an industry that years ago, before we had GMOs, created no income for them, right? All they were doing, at that point, I think they were just making herbicides, right?
Yeah, Roundup was their star, you know, and it still is. They're making billions of dollars just off of Roundup alone, and Roundup is more widespread than ever. But there's four major companies, Monsanto, DuPont, Dow Chemical, and Syngenta. They rake in over $50 billion each year.
They created an industry, didn't they?
Absolutely. And they're cornering the market in some seeds, and the governments are greasing their wheels. There's no regulation of this. There was no research done to see if this was going to be destructive to the human body before it came out. And in the last 15 years, it's exploded. It's taken over. And you look at corn, which corn's pretty much in almost all of our food these days, especially on the grocery store shelves with processed foods. You look at 80% of processed foods have some sort of high fructose corn syrup or some sort of corn in it.
Well, and, you know, here we are Thanksgiving. Most people had turkey today. What did these turkeys eat? Because most of them probably came from turkey-produced places, right?
Yeah, I mean, most likely if you didn't get a organic or free-range bird, they were fed genetically modified corn, canola, and soy, because that's the main livestock feed in this country.
Oh, so that's what we ate.
Pretty much. Yeah, the beef, the chicken, all of us carnivores out there, most of the livestock in this country are fed those three crops.
Is it too late to reverse all this?
It's not too late, but the real troubling fact is that we continue to go farther down the genetically modified path. You know, 10 years ago, these numbers were more like 50% of those four crops, and now they're at 90%. We need to do a better job of educating not just the consumers, but the farmers as well. And really, awareness and education is where it starts, because like I said, most people have no idea. Where people say, oh yeah, GMOs, I've heard of that, or oh, genetically modified, that's just nature's way. Well, it's not nature's way when you're injecting seeds with a pesticide and a herbicide and antibodies so that seed will survive the invasion of those chemical genes. That's not nature's way.
What are the potential health risks here, Eric?
Oh, these studies go back to 1998. Arpad Pusztai, who was the real famous genetic researcher in Scotland Research Institute, did tests that on mice that said that these rats suffered from thymus and spleen damage, enlarged tissues, liver atrophy, proliferation of stomach and intestinal cells. They experienced smaller organs, everything from their brains to their livers and hearts to their testicles. Even there's more studies come out that we're accelerating the aging process with this. It's getting deeper and deeper, but these studies are not widespread enough and coming from the major companies. There are independent and small research studies coming out, and most of the time these researchers are silenced. Lipusti was fired immediately after his discoveries. He made it public in 1998.
Yeah, they get to them quickly, don't they?
Yeah.
How much do you have to ingest? How much do you have to eat before it could start affecting you?
That's the question. I mean, that's the question. We don't know. The research that they have done, even in these mice, that these results persisted after 10 days of testing, and they continued for 110 days, which is equivalent to 10 human years. If three consecutive generations of mammals are fed a purely genetically modified diet, they cease to produce a fourth generation. This is also causing sterility. It's causing higher death rates in newborns in mammals. So we don't know, and each person or individual is going to be a little bit different. We're guinea pigs. We are guinea pigs. We've been guinea pigs for 15 years. Kids that are 15 to 18 years old, they've pretty much been getting this from day one.
Well, you know, let's push the health risks aside for a moment. One of the things that truly concerns me is giving dominance to any companies for seed. You know, as you said, in the past, farmers would hold back seed. You know, if they planted soybeans or corn or something, they'd hold back their seeds for the next season. And they'd do it over and over again every year, costing them virtually nothing. But at least, you know, we had the control over our own destiny. Now we seem to be in the control, the hands of food production. It's in the hands of these companies that make seeds. What if one day they decided to make an exorbitant price for a bag of seeds, for example, not $300 or $350 or whatever it is, but $10,000. What do we do?
Well, that's the thing. Farmers, they've increased the price of so much in 10 years. If that price rise continues in 10 more years, it'll be $1,200 to $1,300 for a 50-pound bag of seed. Yeah, if you let a handful of companies control it, that's exactly what's going to happen. They don't care. They're not out for the goodness of farmers and farms. They don't care. They're out to make more money, and they can do that by dominating the seed markets. If we continue to support these companies, and this, you do this when you go to the grocery stores, when we make our selections with the food, we pick it up, you know, read the labels, find out if it's organic or free range or which company put it out there, you know, support your local food movement, you know, go to farmers markets, CSAs, community gardens, grow your own food. We vote with our dollars every day when we eat, and we eat at least, you know, on average three times a day. So this issue transcends politics. It transcends religion or spiritual beliefs, because we're all equal in the fact that we got to eat every day.
Eric, if a farmer has some bare land, and he's not buying GMO seeds, and a farmer next door is, and those, you know, those seeds somehow blow over into his farm, onto his land, and start growing, and the fact that he didn't pay for it, if they find that seed growing on his land, he can get in trouble, can he?
Oh, yeah. They've gone after farmers numerous times. The most famous is the Percy Schmeiser case up in Canada. Now, that was in the late 90s, and I got to meet Percy a few
what
weeks
happened
ago
to Percy?
In D.C.
What'd they do to him?
They took him to court. They were seeking, at that time, I believe it was $40 or $50 an acre for damage, because he was an organic canola farmer.
Okay.
And his neighbors were found farming with the Roundup canola, and it cross-pollinated with the wind, and they tried to go after him because he was catching the seed. And, of course, his showed up to be some of it genetically modified, because of the cross-pollination. Well, it went to court. I mean, he spent years, and talking to Percy a few weeks ago, he said they try to come after him every year still. It went all the way to the Canadian Supreme Court. He ended up winning, but he had to destroy all of his canola seed.
Oh, my gosh.
Not to mention the thousands and thousands of dollars he spent in attorney fees. And he still travels around the world telling people about this. His battle against Monsanto. He won, but it wasn't such a great victory for him.
I want to talk with you about some organic foods when we come back in a moment, Eric, and we'll talk about your work, Son of a Farmer. Also, Eric's website, sonofafarmer.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. special four-hour program tonight, 2-2, which means Eric's, he'll be with us for 2 hours, and then we talk about Bigfoot for 2 hours toward the end of the show. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will be back in a moment with Eric Herm as we talk about Son of a Farmer on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Eric Herm. Eric, what has been the argument for GMOs? What do they say?
Oh, some of my favorites are that we're using less fuel, which that is true. In agriculture, there's less trips across. But that's kind of like saying, oh, you know, my arms are so much stronger now that I've cut off my legs. It's we're using yeah. so much more poison in the soil. It's a ridiculous argument. Another is that, well, we're using less pesticides. We're not spraying pesticides directly on the crops anymore because they have the pesticide gene. And that's ridiculous as well, because sometimes these plants are actually acting as a pesticide themselves. There's so many unpredictable actions and reactions in nature that you never know what's going to happen from one plant to the next. They're actually proved that some of these plants are producing a pesticide themselves. And then plus Bolgard 1, which was one of the first lines that Monsanto put out, the boll worm has already proved resistant to it. You know, insects are very resilient creatures, and sure. they change their genetic makeup, and they've been
fast.
Overcoming pesticides for decades, and they've already become resilient to one form of the genetically modified seed. So we're not solving the insect issue. The only way we're going to solve the insect issue as far as destructive insects is by raising the energy level of our soil, which will raise the energy level of our plants. And
let me ask you this. If we farmed naturally like we used to and never did anything about pesticides and never did anything about weed control, we just planted the crops and what happened. What would happen in that case?
If we started that right now?
Yeah, I mean, would we get overrun by insects and weeds?
Weeds would eat your lunch up. Yeah.
They would. All right, out of control.
I look at weeds as kind of like a scab. You know, the land was meant to grow grass naturally.
Right.
And we just ripped the flesh off, you know, the top epidermis. We just ripped it off and tried to plant one crop, one plant for, you know, basically hundreds of thousands, if not millions of acres in some cases. Well, that soil knows it's got to grow something. It's supposed to grow something. So these weeds start popping up. And they also bring nutrients to the top of the soil, and they also kind of act as antennas as well. Like we're all walking antennas, you know, we carry a different vibration. Well, these weeds are trying to do that. They've got their own signal, and they're coming to the soil. If you look at the soil, it's kind of like a record player. It's trying to play its own song. And because we have very little nutrients in the soil these days, these weeds act as sort of a supplement to that.
Well, I was going to say, I happen to believe that everything on this planet, everything has a purpose, even a mosquito. But what does a weed do?
To me, they're teachers. They're telling us, you're messing up. Because even right now, you've heard of superweeds that are developing with the Roundup Ready crops. That's happening. I've seen it around it in some of our neighbors' fields.
What's a superweed?
Superweed is a weed that has become resistant to herbicide. We've been spraying so much herbicide, mainly Roundup, that they become resistant to glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup.
Well, like so, some insects are resistant to DDT.
Exactly. And so when farmers first, they could spray one time and it would do the job. Well, then they had to spray two times or three times, and then they would have to up the rate. Well, we're just pissing these weeds off is what we're doing, because they're getting bigger. They're growing more seeds. Weeds are survivors, just like the insects.
Oh, they are. Absolutely.
Yeah, like mare's tail, one of the first one that comes out are horseweed, and then careless weed. I know in Georgia they had to destroy, or they basically lost close to 5,000 acres several years ago. But instead of learning their lesson, they just switched companies. They switched over to another type of genetically modified crop.
So using some kind of weed control, you're not opposed to that?
Oh, no, you have to have it if you're going to be doing row crop production.
Okay.
I mean, we do ours mechanically with our implements, our plows, and then we do a lot of it by hand with hoe hands.
Well, it's an interesting situation. My guess, Eric, I think it's going to get worse, not better. I think more crops will be GMOs unless something dramatically changes one day. I don't think, for example, if somebody knew tomatoes were GMOs, and I think they've stopped most of that right now, I think a lot of people would say, I'm not going to eat this stuff. But, you know, when you buy a turkey, how many people even think about that?
Or milk or cheese or butter, because these cows are fed genetically modified feed.
Right. If it looks like it's the
GBH, if the
product happens to have it in because it's been like a byproduct of, like you don't think you're buying it directly, people are going to buy this stuff. And I think we're going to have more, not less. That's my guess. What do you think?
Well, it depends on the people, because I'm in my travels, and what I've discovered is basically 90% of the public has no idea what's going on with their food supply. They don't really know what GMOs are. And I was a part of the Right to Know March that went to D.C. a few weeks ago, and that's what we were trying to do. We're trying to demand labeling. That was one of President Obama's promises before he was elected, that he would get GMOs labeled. Over 50 countries worldwide have either banned GMOs or they have required labeling. We have neither, us in Canada.
Well, now, that was going to be another question. I mean, like the body scanners, where the European Union has said, we don't think this is healthy. We're not going to use them. We're going to go to a different kind of system. A lot of countries in Europe and abroad don't want GMO foods, do they?
No. I marched with some people from Germany, and speaking with them, they said that if any of their neighbors, anybody finds out that someone is planting anything that's genetically modified, they are surrounded the next day by their neighbors and friends and going, not happening here.
Why are they smarter than we are?
I think it's easier for them to get organized in these smaller countries when you think about how widespread America is, and then also how much more segregated or decimated, or there's a big gap between agriculture and the rest of people these days. You know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, almost everybody's parent or grandparent was a farmer. Well, now,
or they leased land.
Yeah, but now we don't have that. I mean, plus our relationship with nature has changed so much. Even with farmers, we're more like we've become producers instead of stewards. You know, we're more an extension of our machinery and these chemical companies than we are an extension of the land. And then we've treated nature as a commodity rather than an extension of ourselves.
In your work, Son of a Farmer, Child of the Earth, your subtitle is A Path to Agriculture's Higher Consciousness. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, basically what I was just kind of hitting on right there, that the fact that we're no better, we're no different than nature. We are nature. We're an extension of nature, and nature's an extension of us. And the fact that we've gotten away from our relationship, that we consider ourselves superior, that we try to manipulate and dominate nature through so many aspects, not just agriculture, but almost everything. We're trying to whip this land to submission with chemicals and make it do this. You know, we'll plow under 1,000 acres and make it grow this one plant, and that's it. We're not learning from nature. We need to imitate nature. Nature's diverse. Nature's rich in life, and the vitality of it is just so incredible. But yet, we're trying to be a factory. We're turning these fields into factories, and we're turning ourselves into an assembly line.
What percent of our farmland in the United States do you think is run by or owned by huge companies?
Oh. I do not have the answer to that. That is a good question. But we are losing. You look at chicken and hog farmers. That's a classic example. More and more of those guys are essentially working for those companies. They don't own the livestock anymore because they can't afford it. They can't afford the risk. They sign a 6 or 7 year contract to raise those animals and basically be the managers on their own property.
They may own the farm. And in some cases, they're selling that too, aren't they?
Yeah. We're losing. We represent less than 1% of the population, and that's one thing people need to understand. In 1930s, we were 30 something percent. Farmers were. In the 1860s, we were 67% of the population. There are now more prisoners than farmers in this country. And when the baby boomers retire, we don't have enough guys that have come back or girls to the farm to continue this. We need a whole new generation of farmers. We need more people that have these skills so that we're able to grow food locally and really revolutionize agriculture.
Years ago, I had a farm in Illinois, and I bred some racehorses there, but it was 114 acres, and I had about 40 acres that was available for farming. So I leased it out on a percent basis with a local farmer, and I didn't make a lot of money on it. You know, maybe $3,000, and he planted soybeans, and that was back in 1994, something like that. But what was fun about it, Eric, was just watching the process of what he did, going from this bare land to where he plowed it, to where he seeded it, to where the crop grew, to then where, you know, when he harvested it. It was kind of cool to watch that. I mean, I was impressed. I was impressed with the machinery that he had. It was huge.
Yeah, it's crazy. Farming's changed a lot. In the last 50 years, and it's changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Well, I've got to tell you, you know what? I picked up a couple turkeys for Thanksgiving. I did not read the labels, you know, and they're turkeys, brand name turkeys, frozen. But would it have said this turkey ate GMO foods? I don't think so.
No. Okay. There is a movement in this country called the Non-GMO Project. More food companies are getting involved in it, and it'll say on there non-GMO project. Since we don't have labeling, some companies are taking it one step further and going ahead and putting their own label on there.
I mean, I would have liked to have known that. I didn't read the label because I didn't expect it to be on there. But I would have liked to have seen something that said this turkey was fed natural corn or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I could make up my own mind that way.
Absolutely. And more people would as well. We need to know what we're eating. We have the right to know.
Oh, and what store, though? What major supermarket, for example, would have two bins of frozen turkeys, and one would say, eats GMO foods, and the other would say, does not? Nobody would buy the other ones. Nobody would buy the turkeys that ate GMO foods, would they? If they knew. If you could pick between one that did and one that did not, I think most people would pick the turkey that ate pretty wholesome.
Yeah, I mean, rationally,
didn't do them much good in the end, but at least it passes on to us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the goal, so we can at least get some labeling going in this country.
But I mean, I don't think people would pick a GMO modified product if they actually knew it. Do you?
Some probably would, just because they wouldn't think it harms them if it's a little bit cheaper or the same, you know, if it's going to be more for the organic or the one that's not. Unfortunately, I think some people would.
Well, I suspect it has a cumulative effect. And also, you know, people have all kinds of strange ailments. I mean, they may wake up one day and they just don't feel good. Who's to say it wasn't because of what they may have eaten the day before or something like that? It's possible, isn't it?
You look at neurological disorders, for one, like, say, things like ADHD, you know, autism in children has risen 1,200%, I believe, since 1990, which is about the same time that GMOs started coming in. I'm not a doctor, and I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm a naturalist, and you can't tell me the fact that we're putting food that has a pesticide and a herbicide gene in it, and that we're feeding ourselves that it's not having an extremely negative impact on us.
Yeah, good point. What about the honeybees? What do we think?
Some studies, one came out from Germany recently about 2 months ago, and this guy's study said that while the BT toxins in the genetically modified crops didn't seem to impact completely healthy bees, but those that have a fungus or a virus, it basically was fatal to them. And any beekeepers out there know that for whatever strange reason, a lot of bees are very susceptible to funguses and viruses. And when they get that into their system, it's quite fatal.
What do we know about our food czar?
Michael Taylor, he is the main voice coming out of the FDA these days, appointed by President Obama. He has been tied to Monsanto back to the late 1980s. He was a legal defense attorney. He's been a lobbyist for Monsanto. He's been the vice president of public policy for Monsanto. And he's the one telling us, no, 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 don't worry, everyone. Go back to sleep. GMOs are just fine.
So clearly a conflict of interest.
Severely, yes.
Not a lot of people know this.
There's
will now.
Big overlap between government and Monsanto people. You look at Judge Clarence Thomas of the Supreme Court. He was a legal defense attorney for Monsanto. Even Hillary Clinton did some attorney work for Monsanto. It gets pretty deep really fast when you start looking at the revolving door.
So you know, I have no problems with people who don't have any conflict of interest making decisions based on study and science. In this particular case, this person clearly does not have an arm's length relationship and is too close, isn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that seems to be part of the plan or the status quo in government these days.
All right. What do you recommend people do?
First of all, educate and make yourself aware of what's going on. What are you eating? You can go to my website, sonofafarmer.com, get my book. You can also go to a website like Responsible Technology from Jeffrey Smith, who's probably one of the foremost leaders.
GMO guys. He's great.
Yeah,
he's been on the show.
In the country. Read the labels of the food that you're eating. Stop eating processed foods. All the sodas we're drinking these days has high fructose corn syrup. You know, a lot of things that's supposed to have sugar in it, it's not real sugar. It's high fructose corn syrup, and 90% of corn is genetically modified. Eat healthy, eat locally. Try to support your local farmers, the organic guys. Grow your own food. You know, harass your politicians in your area, calling them to demand labeling of GMOs. You can talk to your grocery stores, let them know your concerns. Get active in your community. If there's not something going on, be the one that steps up to the plate and gets it going. Be a leader in this movement. We need more people involved.
I think so. Eric, stay with us. We've got a final hour to go with you here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take phone calls with you. If you have an interest in GMO foods, check in with us. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.